You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Hey, this is the My Aggie Nation podcast. I'm Travis Brown, standing alongside Zach Taylor here. We have a special guest in the studio with us that's going to break down a little bit of a very long and very successful career here in Aggieland. That is the voice of the Aggies, Dave South, who recently announced that he's going to go into his last season broadcasting football and men's basketball for the Aggies. We'll stay on whistle and baseball, but we're excited to have Dave here in studio just to kind of talk a little bit about what it's been like to call Aggies games for a very long time. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys, for having me on.
Definitely, definitely. Well, we got Zach Taylor over here. Zach, with a nice little haircut today.
Well, I appreciate you really miring my haircut.
It was time.
I got one yesterday as well. You didn't say anything about me. How about this?
That is also
got my
a
Marine
fantastic.
Corps cut back.
Very, very nice. Very nice, guys. Well, Dave, I am not an Aggie. I did not grow up listening to Aggie broadcast and everything like that. So it's kind of a treat for me to get to hear a little bit of your backstories. I'm sure some of the listeners might not know exactly all that you've been able to do in your career. Where did it start? Where did the thought of wanting to be on radio and call games, where did that start for you?
Well, it started when I was about 12 years old, to be honest with you. But prior to that, I had become a big baseball fan. I played baseball starting at the age of 7, and I continued to play baseball. My last season of playing was when I was 35 years old. So I stayed with it for a long time, but fell in love with the game. And at the age of 10, prior to the 1955 season, notice I say prior to, I didn't adopt them at the end of the year, but became a big Brooklyn Dodger fan. We had a minor league team, the Sputters, in my hometown, and so we would go down and watch them play, and they were a farm club of the Dodgers. And I asked the coach one day on my baseball team, I wanted to see what he was keeping, it was a scorebook, and he explained everything to me. And I went home and took pencil and paper and a ruler, and I made my own little score page. And I would watch a game and score it on TV or listening to it on the radio. Mutual Radio did a lot they had a game of the day, the Mutual game of the day. Most of them were Cub games because Cubs play all day games in those days. And I would score it, and then I would go sit in my bedroom window, and I would recreate the game looking out my bedroom window like I was in a press box. And I've told people before, the only fan I had sitting outside the window was my dog, Rennie. And so he was listening to all my broadcasts. But it followed from there. And got into radio. And then in 1970, working with a fellow named Frank Fallon, who was a legendary broadcaster, did the Oilers. He was the first voice of the Oilers back in the day. Had a chance to work with one of the three announcers early with the Astros, but he didn't want to leave Waco where he was living. And he tutored me and got a chance in 70 to apply and audition for the Exxon Radio Network. And they hired me to do Southwest Conference football. Exxon owned the rights to every school in the Southwest Conference. And it was a broadcast that was neutral. One week I might do Rice and SMU. The next week I could very well do Texas Tech and TCU. The next week it might be Texas A&M and Arkansas. And they wanted absolutely no favoritism one way or the other. You had to play it right down the middle of the road. So that was where I started in 70, and now 47 years later, I'm still doing it, and the football will come to an end after this 2017 season.
Well, talking about 47 years down the road, I mean, of course, lots of things change over that time, but I know play-by-play as well, you still got the X's and O's, you got the main part of it, but there are a lot of changes in that, too, so how important is it to adapt to things?
Well, when we were the networks early on until 1987, because even after A&M had its own network and I started working for the Aggies in 1985 at home and in non-conference, I would do, whether we're at home or on the road, I would do the play-by-play, and I had a color announcer, and he would do the color. But once we got into league play, when I was at home, I did the play-by-play. The other school, if it's TCU, say, the other school's play-by-play guy would be the color announcer at Kyle Field. And then we would reverse that when I went on the road. So if I went to Rice, I would do the color, and the Rice announcer would do the play-by-play. So you had to adapt a little bit there. And with that concept, it was still, you got to play it right down the middle of the road. Jackie Sherrill changed all of that. He didn't know that was the concept. And beginning in 1987, we went to specifically, I had a color man, and I did the play-by-play on all the broadcasts. So you had to adapt to that. One of the things I've always pointed out is that when I was working as a neutral announcer, when it was the Southwest Conference Network or whatever it was, that you played it down the middle of the road. But once we went to the Aggie broadcast, and it was an A&M network, at that point in time, I know I get accused of being a homer all the time, but it's the Aggie radio network. And now, to say that I didn't, and I still do this, the other team does something well, that was a great play or whatever it happens to be. But I'm not going to get excited about that. I'm not going to go nuts if the other team scores. I'm the Aggie announcer, and it's the Texas A&M network. So from that standpoint, that's how the broadcast turned, and that's how it became different.
So I know a lot of people over the last couple of days have asked you about your favorite game or the game that sticks out to you. But being in the media and having gone to a lot of games, I know that people in the media remember big, important games. But a lot of times the best memories are things that happened off the field, in the press box, on the way to a game. What sticks out to you when you think back, at least with football and men's basketball, that just sticks out, that is one of the best stories, one of the kind of hallmarks of your career, as far as just the things that surround the game and surround getting to the game and everything?
Well, I came to A&M at the right time, because in 85, 86, and 87, Jackie Sherrill had a whole lot of success. And we were winning, and we were going to bowl games. So that kind of got us off and running. And then as it transitioned from Jackie into to R.C. Slocum, those were great years for us. And then we've had some down times, but now we've come back, and I think Coach Sumlin's doing a great job. But, I don't know. Maybe the preparation, getting ready for a game, that's always pretty exciting. It's been neat in moving over to the SEC. We have been welcomed with open arms over there, and that stands out for me, because when we made that transition to the Big 12 out of the Southwest Conference, when we took A&M, Texas, Texas Tech, and Baylor, when we got over there, it wasn't real warm. Now, there weren't any warm and fuzzies at all. The seven schools in the Big 8, which then became the Big 12, there were seven schools over there that absolutely did not want those four schools. They didn't want us at all. But Colorado had sort of been ostracized by the rest of the league, and so Colorado, when we'd have gatherings in the first 2 or 3 years of that league, would come over and side with us. They'd stand over and talk to us. It was really standoffish, and there were some instances where it sort of got ugly in some of those, like the basketball tournament. You get kind of ugly. Words were exchanged one time. I remember, Homer Jacobs, and Homer and I walked into a situation where I kind of got ticked off, and then I had to hold Homer back, because he was going after this guy. He said something about A&M that he didn't appreciate, and that's how it was. And maybe naturally, so I remember that the Nebraska broadcaster came in for baseball one season and made the comment. He said, "How's it going?" And I said, "Well, it's going great." And he said, "Well, I guess so, because you guys have all the power." And I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean we have all the power?" "Well, everybody knows that A&M and Texas are running the Big 12. And I said, "How do you figure that?" "Well, because you are." And I said, "Wait a minute. When it comes to a vote, you have at least seven votes that are going to go against five in this whole mix. So how are we running the league?" And you could see the lights go on, and he goes, "Well, I never thought about that." And we weren't running the league, but it wasn't pleasant. It did develop into good relationships, and I still got a lot of close friends in the Big 12, and those guys will be friends of mine the rest of my life. Now then, the transition to the SEC, that was smooth as it could be. We were playing basketball at Madison Square Garden. We were going to play this particular night. The night before, Kentucky and Duke had played a big game at Madison Square Garden. We were staying at a hotel where a lot of the Kentucky fans were. And Al Pulliam and myself, and there was somebody else at the table. We were wearing Aggie gear. There was a whole table full of Kentucky fans that were getting ready to fly back. They were having breakfast there at the hotel. And one of them got up. Matter of fact, I think more than one. They all came over to our table, at least two or three of them did. and said, we want to welcome you guys to the SEC. This is before we ever played a game in the SEC. We were going to play the next year. We were winding up the Big 12. But we're looking forward to having great years with you guys. We're happy you're here. And that happened a lot. The people that were working in the SEC is, out of the athletic departments, they welcomed us with open arms. And so I think that was a smooth move, and that we were able to get in there and we were made to feel a part of it from the get-go. And I'm sure Missouri probably felt the same way.
And you might have covered one of those teams in talking about this, but besides Kyle Field, which obviously has the best atmosphere in college football, what's one other stadium that you broadcast a game that you would recommend to any fan they have to go to at least once?
Well, and I have to talk to people who go to games because I get there early.
Yeah,
I get out of there late,
yeah.
And I've not been exposed to us beating somebody and to see how they are at the end of that game.
Uh-huh.
But everybody I've talked to said that even when we win, that they're gracious. You guys played a great game today. Congratulations on the victory. And so, for the most part, without naming a school, there is one school where the students aren't real nice. They're rather rude in at least in basketball and baseball. But I'm not aware of. Because I can sit there and I can hear everything that's being said. But in football, I don't know if that's that way or not. I always enjoy going to Auburn. Mm-hmm. With the Eagle, when they release it prior to the game and it gets quiet in that stadium, that's pretty awesome. That's a pretty neat thing. I think everybody's got. I haven't been to Kentucky, so I have no idea, and I will never go to Tennessee, so I have no idea about that. But the other schools, they all have good atmosphere. One thing I can tell you that everybody in this league has great following. They do. Football is first and foremost at those schools, and that hasn't always been true. When we go anywhere in this league, there are fans and they're avid. And I think our fans identify more with the fans of the SEC than we did in the Southwest Conference or the Big 12. I've been fortunate that I've worked in all three leagues, and I can tell you right now that the SEC is by far the best fit for Texas A&M in everything, in the sports I cover. And I'm sure that the coaches or those that cover the women's athletics at A&M probably say the very same thing. But it's a great league, and It was a good move for the Aggies.
For you, I think a lot of people looking at Twitter and stuff came as a little bit of a surprise, the announcement of, mm-hmm. of going to step down from football and basketball. How hard of a decision was that for you, and kind of what went into that?
Well, first of all, age. My wife and I started talking about this prior to my 30th year. We really came very close to making the announcement that year. We prayed about it. That's an important aspect of my life. It's my prayer life. We prayed about it. We made the decision then that we would go two more years. Last August, I met with Learfield, they own the broadcast rights, and I told them that this August I would make the announcement that I would not be coming back after the 32nd season. But being 72, my health is still good. My grandfather, who had more influence on me than anybody else in my life, lived to be 91, and he was a picture of great health. But at 91, he sat down in his chair, told his wife, he had outlived his first wife. They'd been married 53 years. About 10 years later, he got married. He told his wife at that time, wake me up when it's time to eat. And an hour later, she nudged him, and he went to sleep, and he didn't wake up anymore. So at 91, he was gone. And so I've got some things I want to do. And some of those things I want to do are in September, October, November, when it's a little bit cooler. I want to go to Big Bend during the cooler times of the year. I want to go see Cooperstown. I've never been there, and I want to go and spend about a week up there. And somebody has been gracious enough to arrange a VIP tour when I get there. And then my wife's never been to D.C., and I want to take her to the Smithsonian and all of that. Those are just the things we're going to do, and I've got a long bucket list that I'm going to try to accomplish over the next 10 or 15 years. Believe it or not, my first thing I'm probably going to do is I want to hike to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, spend the night, and then hike back up. We went there last year for the first time. If you guys haven't been there, I'd recommend you go. It takes your breath away. I've never seen that before. I've seen Palo Duro up outside of Amarillo, but I had not seen the Grand Canyon until last summer. But I want to do that hike.
Your bucket list is kind of almost mimics mine in a lot of ways.
Is that right?
Yeah, believe it or not. And as somebody who does a little play-by-play myself, you know, and for those who are thinking about maybe going into radio, maybe going into play-by-play, a word of advice that you would give them?
Well, it depends on what, you know, if you're working for a team, if, you know, you're fortunate enough to, whether it's a high school team and you're the voice of, you know, Acme High School and you live in Acme, Texas, you can convey or get across to the audience without being critical of things aren't going well today or tonight, without criticizing, second guessing. You want that coach to be on your side and you want to keep your job. Then, you know, for instance, I could say, you know, we've carried the ball 29 times today and we're minus six rushing. That's, if you're a football fan, that stat speaks to you. You know it's not going well. You know, the line of scrimmage is being controlled right now by the other team. Without saying, I don't understand why he's leaving those two guards in. He needs to replace those guys. I don't do that. Dave Elmendorf doesn't do that. And if you're working for a team, then, you know, try to support that team as much as you can. And I can tell you by stats or that, you know, the ball hit him right in the hands. Or he didn't have good grasp of the football, and that's the reason he fumbled. Or he hit the guy too high trying to make the tackle. You can say that without being critical. Those guys are trying hard every single game. I've told people before that we don't coach to fumble. You don't coach to miss tackles. You don't coach to miss passes or throw an interception. And those kids are trying out there. At this level, I'm not talking about the pros. Now, if you want to go and criticize the pros, you go ahead. But these guys are trying, and they're student athletes. They're amateur athletes. And so don't criticize. Don't second guess. Try to support as much as you can. My wife coached, and I know how hard it is to coach, even at her level in high school.
You talk a lot about and I think a lot of people applaud you for this, the not hiding the fact of you're working for A&M and you don't mind coming across as some people want to call you a homer. What draws you to A&M? What drew you to A&M, and what still kind of gives you that soft spot in your heart for the school, the program, the tradition, all the above?
My wife's father went to Texas A&M. He was class of 41. When I was in the fifth grade, my homeroom teacher was Mrs. Todd, and Mrs. Todd's husband was Dick Todd, who was on he was on the 1938 team, went on to play for the Washington Redskins, and Dick Todd would come up to the school in the afternoons at our playground period, and he'd take the boys out on the field, and we would play football with him. He'd throw passes to us, and he'd talk about Texas A&M. That was my first exposure to A&M, mm-hmm. was through Dick Todd. And he was nice enough to come up there and do that. So I sort of fell in love with A&M right then. And then the fact that my wife's father went to A&M. And I used to come down here when I didn't have a basketball game. I'd buy a ticket and sit in the stands when Shelby Metcalf was coaching. Mm-hmm. I loved to watch his teams play. I've laughed about this before because he was our basketball coach, for those who don't know. But for sure, at one time or another, during just about every game I ever saw, a football game would break out. It became a contact sport out there, and that's how he coached. And I admired Shelby, and we became dear friends when I came down here. But I guess more than anything else was Dick Todd's influence, and then just falling in love with A&M. And when they called, asked me if I'd come down and do 1 year is all they were asking for, and then they were going to find somebody else. So 85 turned into 2017.
Well, Dave, that's about all I got. Do you have anything?
Yeah, I have one more thing. I think a lot of things that'll be on everyone's mind is what necessarily goes into being the voice of the Aggies, and what the administration and those involved higher up should be looking for. What do you think is vital for just the voice of the Aggies, and kind of as the search begins, what qualities, what characteristics, what do you think is important for that next guy?
Understand everything about Texas A&M, everything. Buy in to the traditions. I usually, if I don't have a baseball conflict, I will I'll go speak at muster. Down through the years, I've gotten, you know, unfortunately, when they start calling out names now after all these years, some are the names that I recognize. And so I've kind of made a point to tell everybody, appreciate your friendship. The ones that I know real well, tell them I love them. But buy into what A&M's about. I know we had one coach here that we had it was one of the radio shows we did with this coach, and a young man came up and said, I said, how are you tonight, before he asked his question? And he said, this is the greatest day of my life. And I said, really, what happened? And he said, I got my Aggie ring today, and held it up like that. And before I could say congratulations, the coach sitting to my right went, what is it with you Aggies and those rings? And I went, oh, golly, you shouldn't have said that. And the young man said, well, they're important to us. It's part of the culture. It's part of A&M. And then the coach goes, well, men shouldn't wear jewelry. It doesn't look good on a man. Well, he got hissed. And he's looking at me going, did I say something wrong? Let's go on. Let's move on. That coach had not bought into what A&M's about. And I think it's important that whoever takes my place, that he appreciates what Texas A&M's about, to have the values that Texas A&M has, and to also be supportive of that coach and the program and of those players. That's one thing I appreciate about Dave Elmendorf. He's a guy that played here in two sports and was an All-American, and he's played at the highest level, went on to play in the NFL. Dave could, but he doesn't coach. He just tells you what happened, and then you make your mind up whether or not you feel good about that.
Definitely, definitely. And, well, I think we were talking about this a little bit earlier before we went on the air. Is this going to be the year for the Dodgers?
Golly, I hope so, but, you know, I get nervous. You know, last night they were down 1-0 and finally tied it, I guess, in the bottom of the seventh, and then scored 5 runs in the bottom of the eighth inning and beat the White Sox. They're going to get Kershaw. They're doing right now. They are 50 games above 500 as we talk. They're going to get Kershaw back. He's going to do a sim game today, and I'm hoping he's back by September. Also, Gonzalez is going to be up on the 40-man roster as of September 1, and so is Andre Ethier. They're both going through batting practice right now. But, you know, we've had trouble. The Dodgers have. I'm not with them. But the Dodgers have had trouble in the playoffs. So over the last few years, and Kershaw has had a hard time. A lot of people don't know this, but, you know, he'd signed a scholarship or committed to A&M and signed to come here. But somehow about – what was it, $5 or $6 million signing with the Dodgers? Hey, you know what? That was an easy decision for him to make. I always wondered what it would have been like to have broadcast games with Kershaw on the mound for the Aggies.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, from two Ranger fans over here, we hope that you enjoy Yu Darvish. And
he's pitching tonight.
Yeah. It looks like he's been able to turn things around a little bit since getting a change of scenery.
Well, his first start got 10 strikeouts. I think he went 7 innings and may have allowed 1 run. His second start wasn't that good, but he had 10 strikeouts again. Mm-hmm. So I don't know a whole lot about him until he started playing for the Dodgers. Mm-hmm.
Well, Dave, that's about all I got. So enjoy Yu Darvish while you have him.
Yeah, because he's probably going to go back to the Rangers.
You know, I don't know. I think he likes being in the big market. I think
right?
L.A. or New York. I think that's kind of the places.
Well, he's got he's got a fellow Japanese player with him on that.
Yeah,
Kenta Maeda. So they have somebody to talk to now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Dave, I think that's about all we've got. But really appreciate your time. We actually kept you longer than I thought would. But as always, great talking with you. Congratulations on 30 plus great years, and hope this season's the best one.
I hope we have a great year with all of our sports, but specifically since it's my last with football and basketball. I like both of our coaches, and I want them both to be successful. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that both will have good years.
Well, Dave, thank you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep it rolling. Again, you're listening to the My Aggie Nation podcast. It's the My Aggie Nation podcast, presented by The Eagle.
Yeah, MyAggieNation.com.
MyAggieNation.com.
We'll throw a little WTAW in that mix.
Hey, there you go. I'll have this posted. Should Woo-hoo. Be posted. But just got done visiting with the voice of 12th Man Athletics.
Dave South. Like, just so many cool stories.
No,
I just wanted to sit here all day and hear all kinds of cool stories.
Dave is definitely one of those guys who you can sit down and, you know, a couple hours later you look up and you don't realize where the time has gone, because he is chock full of them, you know, travels and people that he's met and things that he's experienced. And it's really cool, at least for a sports guy. You know, that's something really cool to me, getting mm-hmm. to talk and, you know, the kind of athletes that he's been around, the coaches, the stories that he has traveling with them, is really cool. And obviously he's chocked full of wisdom, and this will be his last year with Aggie football and Aggie men's basketball, but he's going to stick around for baseball for quite some time, hopefully.
And sometimes you radio guys have a little bit of different interaction with the coaches and the players, and sometimes us newspaper guys do.
Well,
and you get a little bit more look into kind of the personality and who these guys are, and that's always
well. And as Dave said, you know, as the play-by-play guy, he's on the A&M side, you know. And I'm not saying that us, the other folks in the media, are out to get A&M, but we're not taking sides here. We're not for A&M, so to speak. Does that make
mm-hmm.
sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he's part of it. He's part of the athletics program. And so they feel that they can trust him, and they develop those relationships because they work side by side. Whereas us, you know, we kind of come in and we ask Kevin Sumlin, hey, why isn't this working? You know, what do you think about you losing your job, possibly mm-hmm. losing your job, da 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 da, as opposed to, you know, the other side of the coin.
Sure.
And so it's interesting getting to know that and talking to him about the way that he does things. And as I mentioned too, not only as a sports guy, not only as somebody who went to Texas A&M and listened to Dave growing up, but also as a guy who dabbles in a little play-by-play myself, it's cool getting to talk to those folks who have done it for quite some time and mm-hmm. kind of pick their brain a little bit, so to speak.
And you know, according to our buddy Colin Devers, reporter over at KAGS, I meant to ask him about this. He has quite the sports memorabilia collection.
Deves does?
No, Dave South does.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
He's got some sweet baseball autographs and just some I think he had a Joe DiMaggio autograph of it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty interesting dude. I am very, very glad that we were able to get him on here and pick his brain a little bit about what was a very, very successful and well put together career.
I'm glad that he could stop here on his farewell tour. It almost kind of seems like that because he's just making the rounds around Bryan College Station.
Definitely. Well, you mentioned, you know, all of these hard-hitting questions that we ask Kevin Sumlin. We've gotten a little bit of that over the past week or so because fall camp is fired up
fall
underway
camp.
Here at A&M, and we're over halfway through it. Yeah, we're definitely over halfway through it. We are closer to that season opener against UCLA than we were at any other podcast so far.
By the way, congratulations. Nick Starkel was taking snaps with the ones yesterday.
Yes.
You all along have been saying that you think Nick Starkel will be the starter. Now, that's not saying that he will be.
Right.
But it's pointing that way, at least after yesterday.
Well, it wasn't just yesterday, too. For those of you who kind of watched some of those practice highlight videos that dropped, so we were out there for the first 15 minutes or so. Usually it's about 20. And we get to see a lot of stretching. We get to see a lot of individual drills. So, you know, throwing footballs into trash cans. Well, yesterday they were throwing... They were the wide receivers, the whole quarterback core was out, split out as wide receivers running through their plays and whatnot, and each got to take turns throwing to other wide receivers, so that was kind of fun to watch. But right at the end of when we are able to be in there, they usually run a two-minute drill,
mm-hmm.
and with the whole offense out there. And the past three times I've been in practice, Nick Starkel has been the guy with the ones. So that at least I think is telling me something, but it will still be interesting to see. I would expect. Excuse me.
Is this boring to you?
Yeah, I'm just real
Are
tired right
bored?
Now.
Are you bored?
I'm just real tired.
Oh
right
yeah,
now.
You had to get up here at what 10:45 today.
It's way earlier than I normally do.
Poor baby.
It'll be interesting to see because I would think the Coach Sumlin would be dropping that announcement here probably next Monday night or Tuesday, would seem like.
What did we have? The anniversary of Johnny being named the QB. QB1 for 2012 was earlier this week, I guess. So you would think it's starting to come down to the wire here and that Kevin Sumlin would be announcing that quite sometime soon. Also, of course, the quarterbacks are going to take
over the main spotlight. Everybody's wondering who is going to be the guy when A&M goes into UCLA. But how about Justin Dunning and the trip that he's made back from injury? And what did I see this? He was getting down in a three-point stance, running from the line yesterday, kind of as a defensive end.
Yeah, yeah. That I was over kind of watching the quarterbacks yesterday, but I saw some of that video, and that was fascinating because when I was out there scoping out the linebackers last week,
you were Myron.
I was. He was out there playing a strong side linebacker with, and this kind of goes back to that whole conversation of how much do some of these individual drills really tell us about, you know, who's starting and who's whatever. But in some of those linebacker individual drills where they had three linebackers out there, you know, doing whatever, it was Atara Olaka at weak side. It was...
Or Atara Olaka, depending on who
sure.
you talk to.
It was Terrell Dotson at Mike, and it was Justin Dunning over there at the strong side linebacker. And so I thought that kind of looked pretty good. I thought that might be an indication of maybe where he was, and they might be playing a little coy with how much recovery time he has left. But yeah, he was out there working at defensive end, and maybe it's one of those guys kind of like a Donovan Wilson that can provide you depth at multiple positions.
I kind of see them using him somewhat like a joker, you know, the way that Von Miller was used at A&M and is now in the NFL. You know, a guy who is versatile enough and strong enough that he can be used either up at the line or back in coverage. A guy who is a safety and is now converted to linebacker. If Justin Dunning can stay healthy, I think he can play a big role on this defense, especially if John Chavis is open to using him at multiple positions and multiple packages. So he's a guy who has been around the program for a long time. He just hadn't been able to play much because of those injuries.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it'll be a guy to see if he will be able to stay out there because of his injury past. It's been pretty pretty rough on his knees. Zach, you've been out there talking to people. What has kind of stood out to you in the last week of talking ball with coaches and players?
You know, a lot of it, what we see, that's kind of what I'm going by as opposed to necessarily what the coaches might tell us. But you've been there. You've been privy for the same things. You know, the question keeps coming up. What's going to be different about this year than it was last year? So far, you know, every year it's been, well, this is different. This is going to be different. We implemented new things in our workout program. We've got new personnel. We're trying different things. So far, they haven't been able to find the answer to get away from that late season collapse. Can they do that this year? And are they even going to start out the way that they have the past three seasons? And you don't think so.
No.
But coming into this year, there's a lot of variables that have not been answered as of yet. And quite frankly, I don't think we're going to find out a lot of those answers until UCLA.
Well, for what it's worth, you mentioned trying to change things. Practice has looked very different this fall than spring or fall practices, at least the last two spring and one fall that I've been here. And I think a lot of that is attributed to Mark Hockey. Now, I don't know, you can't say it looks different in a better or worse way because you don't know how the season's going to turn out, but the aesthetics of it, the way that they stretch, the way they line up for stretches, the order in which they go through their drills. Really, the only thing that looks similar to me from last year is the quarterbacks are that looks is when they run over the little pylon things, then go into the 2-minute drill.
Yeah,
that's really about the only thing that's similar from even last spring or the fall before. And so things have been changed. It'll just be worth seeing if that's worth anything once the season comes around.
Yeah, and Kevin Sumlin's had to change by necessity because, again, with his job being on the line and the team having finished at 8-5 the past 3 years, there has to be something. Something has to change. Something has to be done. And so he's trying different things. As an Aggie fan, you know, I think people will need to, you know, for Aggie fans, people will need to see that. And at least that should be a positive because Kevin Sumlin saying, look, we've tried this. It hasn't been working. Let's try something different. Whether or not it will work, as you said, has yet to be seen. We'll find out this season. But at least he's open to change. He's not stubbornly just sticking with the same thing, getting the same results. He's trying to fix this. He's trying to get better. But we'll see if it actually happens.
Definitely. Well, we have a whole another week of a few days of fall camp before you get into game week.
We get to visit with Jeff Banks today.
We do get to visit Jeff Banks.
He's a little gravelly.
We'll have the specialists this week too. The special teams specialist. Which, by the way, I had a video yesterday of Daniel LeCameron kicking a 65-yarder.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
He hit two of them, I think, out of about 4 or 5 tries. So
he's of course came out of Florida, big time recruit for the Aggs.
Recruiting.
So yeah, we'll see what Daniel LeCameron can bring to the field.
We'll have plenty of more to talk about after talking to some more coaches and players this week. Love another scrimmage. We might be talking about who the starter is for Texas A&M at quarterback next week on the My Aggie Nation podcast. In fact, if I would put a very, very small sum of money down, I would bet that we'll be talking about who the starter will be at quarterback.
Oh, I thought you were going to say who the starter is already. I thought you were making your guess.
My money is on Nick Stark.
Okay.
But if I had to put money down on if we will know or not, I would think that we will know by the next
A gentleman's bet, shall we?
Oh, I'll bet you a dollar.
You willing to put your money where your mouth is?
I'll bet you a dollar.
No, a gentleman's bet is $2. It's one $2
right.
bill.
Okay. Then yeah, I'll bet you $2 that
okay.
we'll know. You don't think we'll know?
By next week?
Yeah.
Yeah, we will. Oh, I thought we were talking about who the guy will be. I thought we were going to go ahead and make our predictions now.
Okay, I'll do that too.
It'll be
$2 on Nick Stark.
All right, $2 on Jake Kupanek.
Okay, well, there you go. We'll settle this score next week right here in this studio between me, Travis Brown, that guy over there, Zach Taylor, on this, the My Aggie Nation podcast. So, with that being said, we'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way, the way it must have seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't easy, girl, we know that's true. But if we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. I wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't want